Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 14th of November, and I'm recording at, looks like, 9:10 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time in London, of course. Okay, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, I want to just mention a couple of situations which are really quite interesting in here today. We've had a surge of interest in the commodity markets here, and particularly for crude oil and gold and silver. Now, we've got an OPEC meeting a little later in the month, and inevitably there would be some short covering that would occur in the prices of crude oil before that, as they'll expect some sort of policy to occur. And also, I mentioned in yesterday's audio that oil prices had accelerated downwards. Oh, I've mentioned them in a number of previous audios in the last couple of weeks, that crude prices had accelerated lower, and so the decline was certainly beginning to look climactic. Now, today, I keep looking up at the screen because these prices keep changing. They're still trading after hours. But for instance, the WTI crude oil right now is just below $76, and it had been as low as $73.25 here this morning. So that's really quite a significant change, almost $3. And Brent crude, just a moment ago, was at $79.69, and it had seen a low of 76.76 this morning. So again, you can see nearly $3 improvement on the day's lows. Now, silver and gold have sometimes responded to moves in the oil price. Not always, but over the decades, I do know that I've seen it on a number of occasions. And one of the links was, well, aside from the fact that they're commodities, but I know that people who have followed OPEC quite closely, if the oil price was going down, they had less money to buy gold and silver. And but again, as I say, this is not an all-the-time link, but occasional. Now, so gold, interestingly, is, and again, these prices are still trading here after hours. So just a few minutes ago, gold was trading at $1,190 after $1,147 this morning. And silver was trading at $1,631 just a very short while ago, and that's after a low of 1525. So silver has risen over 4% from the low that it had seen here this morning. So quite dramatic action there. And what's interesting, on both gold and silver, this is the second big upward dynamic that we have seen in the last week, because on the 7th of November, also a Friday, we had last Friday, we had a new low for gold, and then it ended with a big upside key day reversal. So this is the second big upward dynamic that we have seen for both gold and silver over the course of a week. Now, I should say that that's the most bullish upside action that we've seen for some time. Following the 7th, we didn't get any upside follow-through. As a matter of fact, they eased back. But Again, to get this second big upward dynamic, and evidently the volume was quite heavy, and there was a lot of option trading actually going on as well. So again, at minimum, we're certainly seeing some two-way market activity in here for a change. And so, what does it make for this to be? What do we require for this to be conclusive? Well, first, the silver upward dynamics were bigger than gold. That's really quite positive, because if we get silver outperforming, remember I've always described it as high beta gold, so that it moves upwards faster in a really good rally, and it falls faster and further in a slump. Now, let's take gold. What does gold need to do on the upside? Because a lot of people had been lamenting the fact and selling because we'd seen gold break under three lows. Gosh, must be dating back the better part of a year or so. And a lot of people were then talking about $1,000 to $800. Again, these big moves after it's already fallen a long way. So I describe that as sort of climactic activity generally. But to the upside, gold had an October high a little bit below the 1260. I think it was around $1,257. So really, I'll say here this evening that gold needs to get above $1,260, needs to close above $1,260. That would break the October rally high, and that would be the initial good evidence of a potentially significant downside failure. And again, that would be important technical action. Okay, so we will follow these markets closely. Well, we always do, don't we? But extremely interesting. And what about platinum and palladium? Well, they didn't do anywhere near as much, but platinum is up $15 here today at $1,213 and a lot of change. And let's see, that was after 11:77 and change this morning. So good bounce off that low. Palladium just sat the whole thing out. It's down $4.75 on the day at 7.66. Okay, so let's go from there back to these stock markets and try to build a picture in terms of what we're likely to see here over the longer term. Now, starting with the Asia Pacific region, there are several that stand out as far as I'm concerned, and the ones that stand out the most. So first, the big three in here, and first one, and I'm mentioning them in sequence here that they're listed. But the first one's Japan, and I've described this as really the recovery situation, well, of the decade here, because or longer. Because Japan had that roughly 25 years of just horrendous relative performance, punctuated by occasional sharp rallies, but then going down to new lows. Well, it was steady in here again today, and it's broken up out of this trading range, or it's in the process of breaking up out of this multi-month trading range, which is a consolidation of last year's world-leading gains that we saw. And I think Shinzo Abe, well, I would back his policies. I've said that all along. And what else are they going to do? They have to try to reflate their way out of this problem, and that's exactly what they intend to be doing. And I think that Japan really is. Well, I've already said it's a great recovery prospect, and a lot of people have been hedging the yen which is certainly understandable in here today. The yen has slipped to, let's see, 116.30, 116.30. And so the yen's still weakening here against the US dollar. Now, what's the next one? Well, another recovery situation here is China. The Hong Kong Stock Exchange has done better, at least until about 4 or 5 weeks ago, when these democracy riots, protests, I should really say, they weren't much in the way of riots, but they were very, very big protests, which interrupted business activity in China, and in Hong Kong. And that affected the market quite badly. And so it slipped back and underperformed, but it's been picking up here and up again a little bit here today. But the Shanghai Composite Index has been down a tiny bit today, but it's been really quite strong in the last two months, at least the last 2 months in here today. Now, we're currently showing on the year, for instance, a 15.74 gain in U.S. dollars, 15.74% gain for that Shanghai Composite Index in U.S. dollars. So that's outperforming Wall Street, you know. And there's a lot of talk about how, well, Wall Street's everything and a really safe place on the, from the talk shows, financial talk shows. But you see, some of these Asian Pacific percentages are way outperforming it. The Hang Seng Index is getting back into positive territory, up 3.34% on the year. So that's not all that much. Now, but I do like this China market, and it's the cheapest by far of the big stock markets here overall. And I just... you know, I've described China as an enigmatic market, you know, and lots of mystery, lots of very, very different views. You get all the extremes here, although a majority of the views are pessimistic rather than optimistic, and that makes me more optimistic, in addition to what I see from the valuations and also the leadership that we're getting in here right now. And that brings me on to Alibaba, which I do feel is an impressive situation and worth having for as a certainly a speculative growth play on a setback. So it's quite volatile, so it always needs to be purchased on setbacks. Okay, moving on quickly, here's India. Well, star performer here, the S&P BSE Sensex 30, that is up 33% on the year in U.S. dollar terms. So a dominant performance. This is Narendra Modi's achievement. And this is the most important, I feel. The election that we saw earlier this year was the most important election of the year, and I think it's the most important election of the decade here. Although the decade's far from over, we're not even halfway through it. Again, India going from just being a no hope market, all that political corruption and inefficiency and confusion. I mean, India's had some good prime ministers, but you know, they just didn't have the power. But Modi does have the power. He has the majority, and he's probably the smartest of all. And I don't think you've got a comparable figure on the political stage here today in terms of economic brains, tremendous charisma, comes from a very humble background, which works very much in his favor in appealing to all of India. And India is my favorite market here for as long as Narendra Modi is around. Okay, what else? Australian, New Zealand, they are having some trouble with the resources sector. New Zealand's the better performer here and doing extremely well. But I like both of those. Vietnam possibly, but China is a risk for Vietnam, as I've mentioned on so many other occasions. Okay, going to the European stock markets. There's a lot of red here, particularly among a number of the EU markets. For instance, here's Germany. It was up a fraction today, but down 11.69% in US dollars. The Euro Stoxx 50 down 10.25% in dollars. this is not terribly good. The UK, inevitably affected by this, down 6.67% in US dollar terms. So you've got the Eurozone's appalling economic performance, a very risky situation. The savior here is Mario Draghi, in the sense that he wants to have an aggressive quantitative easing policy, as the Fed had. And it's worth recalling that when Ben Bernanke introduced the US QE program, the main point that he mentioned about that was that it would push up the stock market and that would improve economic confidence in the in the US. And well, he was exactly right. Well, that's what China's bigger pardon, that's what Japan is doing right now. And it's driving up the stock market, and that will improve economic confidence generally. Well, that's what Mario Draghi wants to do in the EU, with a lot of opposition coming from Germany. My guess is that Draghi might hold the upper hand there, but you know, it's a delicate, tense situation. Then you've got the whole Russian problem here, and what a nightmare for Europe that actually turns out to be. So, you know, I always describe global investing, it's a global beauty contest. And if you've got poor economic performance in Europe, despite the fact that Draghi's bringing in the QE or trying to bring in the QE, and then you've got the Russian situation overall, people can vote with their feet. And the only companies that I really like in Europe are the autonomies, the big multinational companies, which have operations all over the globe. And to mention a couple of them, BMW and Daimler, the two quality automobile manufacturers. Excuse me. Those are yes, they're German companies, and they're on German valuations, very cheap. But these are world-class outfits, as I say, and they're earning revenue from all over the world, and even more importantly, they have a lot of production facilities around the globe, and no doubt we'll have more in the future. Okay, what about Wall Street? Well, it's got a lot going for it, but not valuations and not the current politics. So that's what you're left with, a more expensive stock market than just about any other major market, but it's still very much in form. It's the technology leader, and we're in an era of accelerated technological innovation, and that's very bullish overall. The only aspect of it that's not bullish is that it causes some unemployment, because it's replacing jobs faster than new jobs can be created. New jobs are always being created and will continue to be created, but this is a problem. We see that with the US, and we've seen that for several years now, and it's not a problem that's going to go away. Economy will have to be awfully strong to cause the man on the street, to use that expression, to feel that he's considerably better off. Okay, and again, Wall Street quietly steady just a little below its highs in here. And a very important point, the post-midterm election period shows that average gain of over 15% over a good many years, and very few actual losing periods during the second half of the presidential election term. And that's a very favorable factor. Yes, QE has ended in the USA, but that money is still out there working for the US economy because the Fed's not about to sell any of those bond purchases that it actually made. So that adds to the appeal. And also, the US has more autonomies than any other market around the world. Don't pay up for them, though. They can become awfully expensive. Well, don't pay up for them unless the PEG ratio is good. In other words, they have very fast growth. And don't buy them if they're very overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. That's just a common sense thing, which I think subscribers are familiar with. But certainly, if they're in reasonably orderly overall upward trends and are not too far away from their rising 200-day moving averages, and particularly the ones that have some autonomies with some decent yields, and many of them do, then that remains an attractive sector overall. On a more longer-term basis, I think that what's quite good is that we've sort of managed to get over some hurdles without too much damage. The Alibaba float, that was a big drain on liquidity, but that helped to trigger a sharp, 9% plus reaction last month, but that was quickly regained. I think that as short-term interest rates eventually start to move up, and that'll probably occur during the second half of last year, of next year, during the second half of next year, as that may be a somewhat bigger challenge for Wall Street, particularly if the stock market has gone higher in the interim, and I s believe it will go higher in the interim. The higher short-term interest rates is not an immediate risk by any means. It won't happen this year, and I don't think it will happen in the first quarter either. But possibly in the second quarter, and I think definitely in the second half of next year, we will see those rates start to move upwards, and that's going to make stock markets nervous. If growth looks good enough, then it is unlikely to be a serious problem. But it's best to be prepared for a somewhat choppy environment, but within these overall upward trends for the most part. And we have to get past this normalization of interest rates, which is going to take, 3 to 5 years or so. And once that's underway, I think those combined factors of the accelerated rate of technological innovation, cheaper oil prices, cheaper energy costs generally in real terms, and we're already seeing some of that, plus the rising middle classes, markets just heaven sent for the autonomies. That all looks good for the USA overall. And I think if you get a Republican president, that will be better as well. So look ahead, think ahead to, for instance, past the midterm elections of the next presidential cycle. That's just over 4 years. That's 4 years away. That could be a very interesting period, and clear evidence that we're getting that secular bull market that I've talked about. So, I know there are a lot of people who are wringing their hands and talking about disasters in here for stock markets. It's probably because they're underinvested. I don't mean that unkindly. But usually when people are bearish, they don't have that many long positions. Otherwise, they'd be a bit schizophrenic, wouldn't they? Okay. What about the bond yields? Well, in here right now, the U.S. 10-year down a little bit today, 2.32%. Overall, that's not a problem generally. I do maintain that this is a very slow motion base building operation overall in those long dated government bond yields, and therefore we are at the end of that long 32, 33-year bullish cycle in terms of falling yields for bonds, and that over the longer term, those bond yields will be going higher. I think and certainly hope that they don't get anywhere near the highs that we were seeing back in the early 1980s, but there's no guarantee that that will be the case. But at any rate, it's a dangerous area, I feel. But bond investors have done exceptionally well over the 3 decades plus of that bull market cycle. I just hope if you've done so, my hat's off to you, but just don't want to be complacent here. It's so easy for people to be complacent near the end of a major secular bull market cycle, but I think there's going to be a lot of money lost in there, and I certainly hope none of my subscribers lose money in those bond markets. Okay. Currencies. Well, the US dollar. That's the one that everybody actually likes. It is completing a large base formation. If you look at the US dollar index, that's down a little bit in here today, incidentally, but it's had a very, very strong 3 month period in here, coming off the lower side of its base formation. There is some historic resistance from that 2007, 8, and 2010, those highs which the Fed had, where the Fed had intervened to knock the dollar back down. Will they do so this time? I've discussed this a lot. My feeling is they may, but quite possibly not for a while. And I think that, again, as the U.S. economy is improving, as long as the U.S. economy is looking to be getting gradually stronger, and it is, then I think the Fed will hold off because they'll know that the dollar will keep inflation pressures in check. Now, again, there's an awful lot of talk about deflation. People have been obsessed with that, and understandably so. But remember, these fiat currencies still losing their purchasing power. And that's not a bad gold story, is it? But stick with the currencies here for the time being. I've noticed that currencies that had been matching the dollar for the first 2 months of its rise just have weakened a little bit here in the last couple of weeks, both the Indian rupee and the Chinese renminbi. Not a big move by any means, not a significant weakening, no dynamics or anything like that. But if the dollar keeps going up, inevitably more currencies will fall away to the downside against it. I think the euro would be considerably lower if it were not for the fact that it's an important reserve currency, and it's a little firmer in here today at 125, 1.2526 against the greenback. Sterling, however, is a little bit weaker, 1.5675. My guess is that the Bank of England would not be unhappy to see sterling drift down to that sort of 150 level here overall, give it a little bit of cushion in here against this generally weak European background overall. And if the dollar moves well above that dollar index level of the low 88 figures in the year or two ahead, we'll want to watch some of those emerging market currencies really quite closely, because if any of those countries have overborrowed, they could, particularly if they borrowed in the dollar markets while all that QE was going on, they could get in trouble. I don't see any evidence of that yet, but it's certainly a medium to longer term risk that we need to watch out for. But in the meantime, I'm just going to emphasize this point that the Asian Pacific region, that's the biggest gravy train here in government stock markets. You know, I mentioned that China being up almost 16% on the A-share index this year. Well, here are the figures for the Dow. Up 6.38 for the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The S&P 500 up 10.36. The Nasdaq Composite up 12.25% this year. Those are respectable figures, but a number of these Asia Pacific markets, not least India, but also the China A shares, clearly outperforming them. And so is Indonesia, so is Thailand. 21% for Thailand in dollar terms, Indonesia, up over 18%. Good, very, very good, very, very good growth rates here. It's a very good appreciation rate. Okay. What else to mention in here? Well, I'll go and move on to the commodities in here now. I talked about gold and silver and crude oil at the beginning of this broadcast, but just very quickly, the downward moves look climactic in those commodities, gold, silver, platinum, and crude oil. Both the Brent and the WTI, they look climactic. Now, a climactic-looking pattern can always become more climactic, and I say that not as a hedge, it's just a straight fact. But the very clear upward dynamics that we've seen in the precious metals make this an interesting level. And I said this back on the 7th as well. So my overall feeling is that people are really recognizing that gold as a store of value, it's a hard currency. And people had forgotten all about that, and they were just concerned about the bear market that was taking place, and the fact that some U.S. investment banks were using it as very much a plaything in here overall. But the prices, I think, are quite reasonably attractive, and the recent technical action is encouraging. If I said more than that, then I would be just it would be a triumph of hope over reality based on the actual evidence that we see so far. I have a little bit of silver, I have a little bit of platinum. It's a very small percentage in terms of my overall investment portfolio. But I'm certainly not going to sell them down here, and they are both losing money at the moment, but less so than a week ago. Okay, cocoa, been bad crops, a lot of cocoa trees have proved not as economical for farmers in Brazil and also in Africa. I've got a Leader article today talking about problems of a shortage, at least in terms of quality cocoa. which and as a and quality is everything in these agricultural commodities, not least in cocoa. Are the actual commodity indices themselves, the what is it that continuous commodity index or cumulative commodity index, has that is that close to an important bottom? My guess is that it probably is that it probably is. My guess, as I've already indicated, is that I think that precious metals are not that far from an important bottom. May have already even seen it. Crude oil, very close. This is likely a potential bottom in here. Industrial metals, they're fairly cheap as well. Agricultural commodities move with the crop cycles. I don't expect them to go ever lower in some sort of deflationary maelstrom. I think we may see some additional recoveries during the remainder of this year. And I think that's really touched on most of the bases here that I wanted to recover. So, just to say to you all, well, have an absolutely fantastic weekend. And Owen will be back next week, which you'll be pleased to hear, and I will certainly be here as well. Meanwhile, oh, one last, very, very last thing. I think I have a date for the next Market Now event. I'd had several people who'd come along last time, who came along on Monday. And yes, we do. We won't have a brochure out just yet. We'll get one out next week. But Markets Now, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. on Monday, the 12th of January. Monday, the 12th of January, and that will once again be at the splendid East India Club. Have a great weekend.